State and local governments developed a dependence on raising money from criminals. The Supreme Court just turned down that spigot of cash. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. This was the case. An Indiana man named Tyson Timms pleaded guilty to selling narcotics to an undercover officer. Aside from a fine, authorities took his $42,000 SUV that Timms had purchased with money from insurance after his father died. Was this an excessive penalty? And do states and local government that use penalty money to bolster their budgets have to worry about that? Well, yesterday, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in favor of Mr. Timms, which could cause a funding crunch in a government budget near you. Amy Howe is co-founder of the Supreme Court watching publication SCOTUS blog. Morning, Amy.
Thanks for having me.
So, with this decision, state and local governments can no longer assess excessive penalties?
Well, the Supreme Court ruled that, yes, the Eighth Amendment's ban on excessive fines does apply to state and local governments. You know, now the next fight will be over what does it mean for a penalty to be excessive. So that's going to be a whole separate legal fight.
And if a person is involved in a crime where a penalty might be assessed, they can now have greater leeway to argue about the fine.
Exactly. And this was a case in which the defendant, Tyson Timms, had pleaded guilty to a crime. But one of the criticisms of these programs is that the standards aren't as high as in a criminal prosecution. You don't even need a conviction. And so there have been all kinds of cases. There was one case in South Carolina where the police tried to seize the home of an elderly woman because they said it had been used for drug deals. But there was certainly no allegation, for example, that she'd been dealing drugs. It's just that someone else had been using her home to deal drugs. And it's been a significant source of money for state and local governments.
Significant source. I mean, some call it a cash cow for state and local governments.
Yeah, I mean, there are all kinds of statistics. And for example, 20% of the prosecutor's budget in Philadelphia came from forfeitures. In California, one year, state and local law enforcement agencies seized $42 million in assets. And a lot of times this was targeting the people with really low incomes and seizing things like cars. We talked to Tyson Timms, the defendant in this case. They took his car, and a lot of places in the country, people need their cars, for example, to get to work. So it was really hitting poor people in particular quite hard.
All right. Very interesting legal meets flow of money story. Amy House, co-founder of SCOTUS blog, always good to talk to you.
Thanks for having me.
Let's check the markets. The 100 share index in London is down 0.6%, but Dow and S&P futures here are up by less than 0.1%. One benchmark for interest rates, 10-year Treasury yield up at 2.69%. And this number, healthcare spending in the U.S. will accelerate in the coming years, with medical care and medicine going from 17.9% of the economy to 19.4% within 8 years. The study published in the journal Health Affairs says part of this is our aging population. Ranchers in the Rio Grande Valley near the southern U.S. border are grappling with an expensive problem. It's a disease vector called the fever tick. These tiny critters ride in from Mexico on the backs of cattle and wildlife that wander to and fro across the U.S.-Mexico border. This is a border issue, so naturally there's a border wall angle as well. Marketplace's Andy Euler went to Hidalgo County, Texas, and has this report, part of our series, Business at the Border.
At a time when the politics of immigration has divided the government and the nation, I traveled to South Texas to find out what it's like to do business on the border, specifically the business of ranching. I met up with 81-year-old Richard Garrett at his home in McAllen, Texas, one county over from his 9,000 acres of land along the Rio Grande River, land that his family's been working for four generations.
My economy is ranching. I make my living off the cattle business, but when I don't have cattle, like right now, it's because of the fever tick.
Fever ticks. Not exactly the issue I was expecting to hear about, but it turns out it's a serious problem. Fever ticks carry a disease that kills cows. Cattle ranching in Texas is a $10 billion industry. The U.S. Department of Agriculture says the ticks could cost ranchers here $1 billion a year. Alex Rosellis studies urban ecology at the University of Texas, Rio Grande Valley.
More recently, we've been seeing more cattle coming over from Mexico into the United States with cattle ticks.
That's because some Mexican ranchers don't have proper fencing or have abandoned their herds. Controlling for fever ticks is difficult and expensive. When a tick is found in a herd, ranchers have to treat all their cows with an insecticide until all the ticks are gone.
For a lot of ranchers, it's a death knell.
The Guerra Ranch was quarantined 22 times in the last decade and was operating at a loss. So the Guerras got rid of their cows in 2015. And this is where a border wall comes in. Now, Richard Guerra and his son Jody are Trump supporters. They want a wall because they think it'll cut down on illegal immigration. But they're also making an economic argument here. Here's Jody Guerra.
Outside of politics, outside of everything else, anything that would slow down or stop us having to deal with the fever tick issue would be of great benefit to us.
Sounds kind of crazy, right? Put up a huge wall to stop tiny ticks? Well, the USDA has already suggested building miles of fencing along the border for that very reason. Again, Alex Rosellis at the University of Texas, Rio Grande Valley.
If you're able to stop the flow of cattle, then ranches that are on that other side of the wall, they wouldn't have that fear of infected cattle coming over from the south into the ranches.
New sections of border wall would likely have to run through the Guerra Ranch. Right now, the Guerras aren't excited about the prospects without assurance that they'll be fairly compensated by the feds. But the family says if barriers are put on their land, they'll be more apt to run cattle again. In McAllen, Texas, I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
And in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.